flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
Looking for a new home should be exciting, not frustrating. That's why Homes.com might just be the best home shopping site out there. Imagine searching for your dream home without ads cluttering your view. Homes.com's sleek, beautifully designed, ad-free interface makes your search simple and distraction-free. And if you're a parent, you know how important school information is. Homes.com gets it. They're the only site with detailed school and district info from multiple sources, including reviews from Niche. Plus, they've got a super comprehensive and transparent agent directory, making it easy to find the right expert to guide your journey. Oh, and here's a game changer. Homes.com always connects you directly with a listing agent who knows the home best. They even go beyond the basics, offering the most in-depth neighborhood content of any home shopping site, packed with details to help you find a community that feels like home. And the search tools? Unmatched. With 22 data visualization layers, 7 environmental layers, and filters for commute times and architectural styles, Homes.com truly is the home search you've been searching for. Go to Homes.com. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Wow. What's up? I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
Can't you see it? A sparkling roadside EV quick charge power facility. It's chargers, control panels, and switchgear powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean. We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We're now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
The Yankee bromance has already started here. Booney's in studios, ripping on me for being short. Him and BT are talking shop. The Yankee love. Aaron Boone live in studio with us. Booney, thanks for coming in.
Hey, thanks for having me. I can't believe you guys got me in, but I'm so excited to be here. It's cool to see the studio, your little digs here. Fired up to be here.
We had to clean it up for you, of course, and we got the packs. We will play Pull Your Card 2 versions, me versus you, and then you versus BT. Right. 83, 84, 85, 86, 87, 88, 89. You will pick the years for each of us.
Yeah, but you didn't hear something. Booney's got to tell you what he told me. I think you were doing something
He's
else.
He's a little nervous?
No, well, I don't want to speak for the skip here. He does it, you know, several times a day as the manager. But when he first heard it, he's, quote, I was kicking your ass. I was playing alone with you guys.
Yeah, so I heard this. I heard it. Last winter, I'm listening to one day, and you guys are playing this, and I'm like, I think I was waffling, you know, on the air, you know. And then when I was texting with you about, you know, getting the details done for this, and you dropped the, well, I was going through my sticker book.
My 85 sticker book.
My 85 sticker book. I'm like, oh, I could be in trouble. Like, first of all, I don't know if you should be admitting that you're going through your 85 sticker book.
Here we go.
Booney, some guys play and some guys collect stickers.
Oh, my God. Yeah, well, now I am going to say
so it. So I know his career. Yeah. Did you play?
I mean, I played in, like, junior
you
high.
Right?
I mean, I was a good defensive player.
You better athlete than Evan?
That sounds great.
Come on, Booney, don't insult me. Better athlete than Evan. Yeah, I mean, come on.
Evan's honestly one of the worst athletes in the history of sports
I
radio.
I saw some video of him hitting one time. I was like, ooh.
Come on.
I don't know what can he do athletically. No, Sal's definitely an elite athlete.
No, I had a glove, but I didn't have confidence. I wish I had the confidence I do now doing this as a player, but I wasn't any good, unlike you. All right, can we get into this before we?
Mm-hmm.
Have you gotten over the World Series yet?
No, I don't think you ever get over it. It's kind of one of the first things when you're talking with the team after the game, and it was, you know, obviously pretty emotional. A lot of people got up and spoke. You know, it's like it's going to hurt forever. I mean, you know, the 2019, you know, walk-off, that really every end to the season, but when you're close in a lot of different ways, the ending sticks with you forever.
What do you say, Aaron? I mean, it really is amazing about just how great Judge is and what a terrific person he is. He's not going to drop a pop fly like that the rest of his life.
Yeah.
What do you say to him?
We just keep it moving. I mean, the one thing Judgey does so well, day in and day out, year in and year out, lives it, is he's just this perfect teammate and really perfect competitor. And when you play in the game and when you live in the game, you understand, you know, we talk about the grind a lot, and you understand that. And you understand the ups and downs of it all. And I've never seen somebody handle the day-to-day 0 for 4 one day, 2 for 4, whatever, as well as he does, like that even keel.
Even better than Jeter? Because Jeter was pretty good with that stuff too, right?
Jeter was great at that. Judge, just because I know him so well now and I've lived it with him, to watch him every single day, he just gets the life and the grind of it all. And for a guy as great as he is, also how hard it is, too.
Mm-hmm.
I know a lot of people make a big deal out of Game 5. Obviously, that inning was horrific. But Game 1, you got ridiculed for the decision there. I personally didn't have an issue with it because I'm thinking, if Cortez is on the roster and he wants to use him here in the spot, so be it. I know you had some regret, though, after the game. Take us through your decision with Cortez against Freeman.
I don't know if it's regret. The decision for me was not Tim Hill versus Nestor, because the inning, while it ended with Freeman, who going into that series, before he went off on the series, felt very much like a shell of himself coming out of the NLCS. Like, he could barely walk in that NLCS. He wasn't the same guy. I think the time off certainly served him well. So the calculus for me was 2-3 hitters. And I knew Cortez, we felt like was a better matchup going into that game against Ohtani. And if the one Hill at bat against Ohtani later in the series was one of the only hits Ohtani got, he smoked the ball to center field. So we had to get two outs.
Right.
We're probably not going to double up Ohtani, right, with his speed. So that, you know, and I like the Nestor matchup against him and especially Betts. Now, once the ball takes Verdugo into the outfield and moves up the runner, then I'm going to take my shot with Freeman with Nestor. And if the ball is 4 inches higher, I mean, he kind of pulled it down and in, and it ended up in the seats. But so I don't have regret about that decision. The one thing was, do I keep Weaver in the game?
Mm-hmm.
And obviously you would lose him for a game two scenario, but then you got the off day. So there's a case to be made there. And that's probably the one I wrestle with the most. He had come off, I think he was at like 19 or 20 pitches. We were tied. I wasn't going to send him out if we were tied, but I think the case to be made, once we took the lead, saying let's roll with him here. But then it's like, do I get to the finish line with him? Then I'm going to somebody else anyway. And he's down a couple days probably. So that was the biggest thing that I still to this day, like, man, I could have gone Weave.
You know what I'm curious about? I know that, you know, the hitters have meetings, the pitchers have meetings. They do this before the game. You have meetings and you go through, hey, if this presents itself, I would imagine, and tell me if I'm wrong, seventh inning, this guy's up, this guy can pitch, this guy's not available, two on, no out, different scenarios so that you're not caught off guard in the moment. And then, of course, you've got to evaluate things in real time. Right before you went to Nestor in that spot, mm-hmm. or any other big spot, how early in a high-leverage game are you starting to plot out the two or three different options you have, like two innings before? How does that work?
We meet probably an hour before every game, regular season and the postseason. Now, the postseason, obviously, you have days leading up to it and more advanced scouting reports that you really dive into that are even more detailed, like maybe a specific matchup that you feel like lines up a little better, or mm-hmm. one that on paper you think might be a good matchup, but as you dig a little bit more, maybe isn't. So it's a little more detailed. I think you get to certain points of the game and you get through certain innings, you can see how it's unfolding. But an hour before each game, it'll be myself, Blake, Harkey, was Desi. Osmus and Louis Rojas are in there.
Cashman's not in there for that stuff?
No.
Okay.
No, and we kind of go through, we have our matchup sheets and everything and what matchups we like, and we just kind of start to talk through scenarios, you know, and I kind of open it up. All right, he's gone five. He gets two outs in the – he gets an out in the sixth at the three-hole hitter. We know it's now a sketchy matchup possibly. He's done. That's how I present it. I'm like, all right, he's done. Who we like for the next round. Now, every team's a little bit different. You know, a lot of teams now are very platoon heavy. So, you know, like the Red Sox this year, we're kind of starting to look a lot like the Rays have been the last few years, where, you know, the Rays, when they've been at their best, like have that complimentary 12, 13-man position player that kind of like, the bulk of it turns into a really good nine, and you know that, man, I bring in a situational lefty or righty, boom, they're firing this guy that is on this team because he handles one-handed really, really well. And a lot of teams are being built like that. The Red Sox were a little bit like that. The Dodgers, not as much. They're a little more like us and less of that pinch-hitting mode. They had a couple of guys, but that's a big one is, okay, if I bring this guy in, are they going to shoot someone? And do we want that even, especially if it's in the middle of the game and you set yourself up moving forward?
Is that what you're talking about, all these lanes? Like, I don't know if you and Cashman are big bowling fans, but it's the lanes and this and that. And, that's what drives me nuts, hearing the lane talk.
Yeah.
But it feels like, even hearing you explain it, Booney, and I get it. Like, there's a part of me that says, okay, well, there's logic behind that. But it's also almost predetermined. And if you're predetermined to, we went over this scenario, and now, okay, we talked about this pregame, so we're going to go with it here, as opposed to your gut feel. You're a baseball lifer. You said it yourself. And I think you've done a better job of that, of applying both in recent years here.
Yeah, but honestly, it happens every night. Every night. There's the balance, and there's every night where you toe the line, where it's like, no, we got to push a little bit here. Even though that might be the better matchup tonight, we're going to try and get another here. A lot of the three batter minimum has changed things a little bit too. And it's not so much, I think in some ways it's fine. I don't mind it. And it's, you gotta, you know, it puts some value in guys that get relievers, especially that get both handed out. But sometimes, you know, I'll take a pitcher out, like say a starting pitcher. And it's like, man, I could have got one more. I know you could have. But I hated the third matchup for the next guy I'm bringing in.
Yep.
And I know he's got to face three hitters.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a lot of times the calculus for even pulling a starter sometimes.
That's interesting. All right, so Aaron Boone is in studio. We're going to knock him around. I mean, play him pretty soon here in the baseball card game.
You both were a little nervous. I'm calm as
can be. I'm not nervous.
You said before he got here you were nervous about the card
game. Well, he's supposed to beat us. Well, I mean, he's a Ranger. His dad played with all these guys. Jeez, if he doesn't beat us, you're a loser.
Now
you
that I'm here,
win,
I'm
man.
Nervous.
Yeah, see? At least you admit it. I respect that.
Okay, let me ask you this. I know we're jumping around a lot here, but to me, outside of Mattingly, there is not another Yankee that is so revered and has that top-level stature, and we know why, the plight, didn't have the teammates, his back, all the can Aaron Judge be an all-time Yankee, no asterisk, all-time without a championship?
Well, hopefully we'll check that second box, too. So that's how I look at it.
We're going if you don't, and trust me, I'm hoping you do as well, but if you don't.
He's as amazing a player and person that I've ever been around. So I would say yes, but I don't even want to think about that. I've said it before, we're hell-bent on getting to the top of that mountain, and that's where I'm not even gonna let myself go there right now.
Okay.
I respect that. BT and I have had these conversations many times. Did you grow up a Phillies fan too? I know you're an Eagles fan, and the reason I ask is because
So baseball, I was a fan of my dad's team.
Right.
Like, baseball's the family business, so it's like I'm not as much a fan of teams.
Okay, but I know you know the history as well as anybody, right?
Sure.
So Mike Schmidt, did you see the documentary that they did?
Oh, yeah.
That was great.
So I learned, I'm a little bit younger than you guys, I didn't know that Schmidt had these postseason struggles and that the Philly fans would get on him, which is not really that different from what Judge has experienced going from the greatest regular seasons of all time to some struggles in the postseason. Anything you could draw from that, Mike Schmidt to Judge?
Yeah, I lived it. I lived the 70s, you know, but, you know, they lost in the championship series, heartbreaking stuff. 76, they got swept by the Reds when they were like, that was the year they burst on the scene, became this great team with an unbelievable nucleus. And then they lost in heartbreaking fashion in 77, 78 to the Dodgers. So I'm 3, 4, and 5 years old during that. And I mean, I was into it from the time I could crawl.
Dialed in, yeah.
But that said, I'm 5, 6, and 8. So I was aware of it, and the team was really, really close. We all lived in the area. You know, we spent the winter like families together and stuff. So we were really close. Like Luzinski's are our best family's best friends, really close with Schmitz and Boas and Tug and on and on, you know, Maddox and Carlton all lived in basically the area. So it really was family. So I was aware of it, not to the degree. And so the documentary was so good. And obviously then he goes on to win the MVP in 80. And it kind of was like this defining moment of cherry on top of probably the greatest third baseman to ever live.
Yeah, he is. That documentary was great. The George Brett one was fantastic. Yeah.
All of those guys. I eat those up. The Cobra.
I saw that one too.
Maddox, they had one recently.
Maddox
on
was
there.
Really good.
I saw that. What do you think is the best, you know, from your perspective, you know, from a competitive perspective, just the optics of the game, what do you think is the best decade of baseball?
Well, I think it's the one that when you fell in love with the game, and it always is that. And so for me, that's the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
Late 70s, 80s. Like that was the height of my fandom and when you're cemented. And I think it's very true is you always romanticize and go back to, that's your default, is when you were the biggest fan. And, well, why don't we do this now? Or, you know, those kind of things. So I would say, you know, the 80s is my wheelhouse.
Would you make of the Dodgers talking a lot of smack post-World Series? I know you're a competitive guy. Yeah. Dodgers had a lot to say about your ball club.
I wouldn't let up. I was kind of hoping you said something,
Not
quite frankly.
Good. Didn't like it. They won, you know, so... You know, that they had that right. So, you know, a couple of the people like saying some things. It's like, did you see what you did this year? Like, it wasn't the Freddie Freemans and Shohei's and Mookie's popping off. It was some others. So, look, they won the World Series. We didn't play our best. And, you know, they're flying high right now. So we'll try and get back to that stage and hopefully punch through.
But they were disrespectful,
yeah.
And you're a competitive guy. Like, that bothered me. I'm not even a Yankee fan. Mm-hmm. I know it had to really, really
I'll just
get
say, yeah, it did.
Well, I know there's more in there, Booney. Come on!
I don't know how you didn't fire back. And I know it's pretty much, it's a waste of time. It only presents more problems for you and things you've got to deal with and that are really unimportant to the bottom line here that don't impact your bottom line, but... Yeah, it's one thing to talk smack. Like, it was deeply personal in the baseball sense because I don't even have the quotes in front of me, but we all know what they were.
Multiple
like,
guys.
Like, basically saying to you guys, a little sloppy. Sorry, yeah, Joe Kelly, some of these guys haven't done a damn thing in years. Like, a little sloppy, whether it's on the base. Like, to me...
Something down your leg.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that's, to me, if I'm the manager, that's an indictment, even if it's unfair.
Mm-hmm.
I'm taking that so personally, and I know it would be counterproductive to fire back, but you had to want to. Did you almost fire back?
I'm almost firing back right now.
Well, don't stop, man. Let's go.
But no, I'm not. They won, and, you know, hopefully we win and you know, handle ourselves in a better way.
All right, well, let me ask you this, then, about the Dodgers, what they're doing from a business perspective.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, it seems like the Japanese pipeline has kind of shifted from the Yankees. Now it's there. Mm-hmm. You know, they made a very astute move getting Betts, very astute move, signed a Freeman. Like, they get guys. Even Freeman maybe was kind of at the tail end. But when they bring guys in, they're all in their absolute prime. And a lot of baseball fans, people that call the station, call me and Sal on social media, basically think the business of baseball is broken. I agree and I don't. What is your perspective on all this business stuff?
Yeah, I think it's probably a little overstated that it's broken, especially when you have like a team like this that we're all going, wow, they signed another, whoa, they, you know, they got, and they've gone to a place payroll wise that it's like, you know, hard to wrap your brain around. And I worry a little bit about that from a collective bargaining agreement the next time. Like, because it's not, you know, when you're ironing out an agreement, it's not always just Major League Baseball and owners against players, but it's owners against themselves because they got to get 20 I feel like 23 out of 30 owners have to agree to ratify.
Mm-hmm.
So you start ticking, and there's always people in the middle that they got to pull over at the end. So I get a little worried about that come, you know, collective bargaining.
Meaning a work stoppage.
Correct.
Now, I'm worried about that, too. I said that to Sal a couple of weeks ago that it came up. I'm very worried about
that.
Yeah. It stinks.
Need the games here. Come on. I can't deal with a work stoppage.
Watch, finally get Soto and there's a stoppage.
Yeah. No, I don't want any part of that. You think you guys could beat the Dodgers this year?
I think we can beat anyone. We'll see. We got to get there, and they got to get there, and that's a lot harder than, you know, just having a great team, you know, in January. So it's a long way away. I don't even, you know, and we talk about this as a team, and I'll tell our guys, like, we ain't winning anything right now. It's about stacking days and trying to get better each and every day and putting yourself in a, and if we do that, we'll put ourselves in a position to go play in October and try and get back there.
Booney, you can manage another, you know, God willing, 15, 20 years and...
Oh, God, no.
and never have somebody like Soto, like that unique skill set to pencil in the two or the three hole the rest of your career. He's that unique. I was a little surprised. I wouldn't say turned off. I was a little surprised that Judge and others, and I get it, it's not like your high school kids, you're grown men with families. I get it. Let them handle business layout. I do understand it. But did you reach out to Soto? Because I know Judge did not. He let him breathe a little bit. When this thing was going forward, how often did you communicate, if at all, with Soto about how much you obviously want him to come
back? Not a lot after we met with him.
Okay.
So when we went to California to meet with them, you know, that was my big time to, you know, really make sure he understood how I felt, how we felt, you know, my expectations and vision of him being there moving forward. So, you know, it was, I mean, what a process and getting to where it got to.
Take us inside the room. I'd love to hear about it.
It was, honestly, it was great. I thought we put our best foot forward. You know, we went out there with Hal and Randy and Cash and myself and Omar Minaya and, you know, basically just kind of broke bread in a room and kind of tried to lay out our vision and him being there potentially then long-term, like what that looks like, what the expectations are around that, about being just more entrenched in the room. So just kind of laying that out. I will say he was awesome. I mean, he really was. He and I had, a great relationship. And, you know, the respect I have for him, what he's about, what he brings to the table each and every day. Like, he loves the game,
mm-hmm.
and he's a killer at his craft, obviously. He's very coachable. Like, man, I could get on him about something in the game, and he was not a diva by any means. It was like, you know, he took pride in some of the things that aren't his strength, you know, believe
fielding,
it or not.
Base like, running, stuff like that.
He cared about that stuff. You know, those are just more challenging things for him.
You get on, guys?
Huh?
You get on, guys?
No.
Hey.
So you may not do. I know there's a sleeping giant in there that we don't get to see, and then we sit here and say, oh, how could Boo not hold this guy accountable, that guy accountable? And then we got some insight to your brother, and we pay attention to your personality, the fire personality. There's no way you're not holding these guys accountable, or trying to at least, behind the scenes. Can you give us a little bit of insight? I don't want to name specific players, but we know what we're talking about here. When guys don't play the game the right way, what's it like with Aaron Boone behind the scenes?
Everyone's different. I say this all the time. I treat all 26 guys differently. Well, actually, it's more than 26, right, when you consider all the people that come through. So I have a different relationship with all of them. I treat them all a little bit differently based on what I think they need, what I expect. Sometimes you get it right. Sometimes you don't. Sometimes there's bigger confrontations behind scenes. Sometimes it's, you know, you're building guys up a lot. You know, it's on me and my judgment to decide what I think a guy needs to get the best out of him. Ultimately, that's what we're trying to do, is get the best out of these guys. So that requires a different tone with each of them, I think. And you know, I think authenticity matters, so I think it can look a lot of different ways. I try to establish enough of a relationship with all of them to hopefully they know that I really care about them. And then it allows you to have, whether it's a tough conversation with one or whether it's building somebody up. Hopefully they know it's coming, that I care about them and their career.
Yeah, and I, you said you don't want to mention names, and I respect that, but we've talked so much about Gleyber, and we wish him well. He was a good Yankee,
yeah,
good guy. He seems like the kind of player that you had to build up. Now, that's a long-distance read where he, I don't want to put words in his mouth, but maybe a little sensitive, maybe wanted it too much in certain spaces, maybe didn't want it enough in others. Like, he would have really been confounding to me,
yeah,
if I'm you, because his talent's undeniable, but the fluctuations in focus would have absolutely driven me nuts.
Yeah. So, first of all, I love the person. He really does. He cares a lot, and really over the last couple of years, too, has taken a lot of pride in going to the post every day. Sometimes, look, unless you have lived it and played in the game and played in the grind and played in the pressure of Major League Baseball, especially playing in New York, like, a lot of guys handle that in a different way to try and, you know, so sometimes, you know, Paul O'Neill's going to look different than, you know, Gleyber may look.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a little more gray than that. It's how they handle and try. You got to make plays and you got to produce. How do you do that? Do you do it by, sometimes you do it by slowing things down a little bit, and that's not always the best look to a fan. Gleyber really cared, like you said, was a really good Yankee. What he did at the back end of the season last year and into the playoffs was enormous for us. You know, I've had a lot of talks with Gleyber over the years. Mendy and I have had a lot of talks. I've had a lot of talks with Gleyber, Gleyber over the years. But, you know, I feel like it won't surprise me at all if he goes and has a massive year in Detroit, because he's capable of that. He cares. And, you know, sometimes it just comes out a little bit different.
All right, we got to get game one, right, round one here. You two are up first because I'm the champ.
So, but before we do Booney?
That, yeah, you're going to go against Booney. I'm going to have Booney pick the year. One more, though, on that, because you mentioned Mendy, made me think of it. I asked him on Saturday if he texted you a little trash talk after they got Soto. He said no. Did Soto text you after he left?
No. So Mendy's been very, very delicate with that. Like, we actually had dinner, him and his wife and mine and my wife in the city this past weekend. And then we sat next to each other on the dais at the writer's dinner. And the yearbook for the writer's dinner, you know, we're kind of thumbing through it. About halfway through, he turns it over on the back, and it's Soto and all the Mets stuff. And he goes like this. He just kind of slides it over to me like, I'm like, come on, man.
It was great because I was like, come on, you guys are boys. You had to text him. He's like, nope, no, I ain't doing that, man. Because he's saying that it comes back around.
Yeah. So listen, hold on. I got to follow up. I know we're doing the games here. Yeah. But, like, yeah, and you'll move on. And we'll get to the moves that you got. And I like what they did. Yeah. That was a very good pivot. I think you guys will be very good this year. But, man, how are you not heartbroken that this guy's not the two-hole anymore? It's Juan Soto. I'm not saying it's anybody's fault.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. Is the one thing is I'm so proud of how Hal and ownership, where they went to, how they handled it. I don't think it ever would have stopped if we kept going and all the accoutrement things that started to add up. It's like, I feel like we put a great foot forward. I feel like we made a great pivot. But, you know, for a lot of people that are just like, wow, we got four, like, Juan and Aaron back-to-back, like, was, you know, even though maybe you had some flaws otherwhere on the roster, you know, really, I mean, was the reason for our ultimate strength of getting to a World Series.
Dude, that at-bat in Cleveland.
Oh, man. Wow. God almighty.
I mean, that at-bat, you've been around the game, obviously, we're just watching as fans. Have you ever seen anything? That at-bat was on.
And he had so many of those throughout the course of the year, you know, like, first at bat of spring training. I think he went deep his first at bat at spring training. And I was just like, and Aaron, like, it's spring training. I'm like, yeah, but think of that at bat. All the anticipation, eyes on that bat, and to watch it play out. Yeah. And then to watch, you know, we go to Houston to start the year. And then, you know, the amazing thing was I had a lot of people, you know, during the season, middle of the season, later part of the season, when we'd, you know, be in another city, maybe a front office person from another team come up and just ask me about Soto or whatever. I'm like, or Judge. And I'd be like, you know, the amazing thing is I can't imagine a better offensive season than what Juan's doing right now and the level at he gives you every night. And then I'd say,
look right behind him.
And Judge has 100 points on him in OPS.
Yep. That's unbelievable.
Like that. Oh yeah. That was for me. And I tell Aaron all the time, sometimes I take him for granted a little bit. Like, his greatness on top of the season that Juan was having is, it's hard to fathom.
Yeah, but what you really, what are you doing? Give up your suite or your tickets. Keep the guy here. I mean, come on. You know, we know you got to hook up.
What you're really saying is you guys have the best right fielder in New York. I hear you, Skip.
Oh,
I got you.
Stop.
That's exactly what you're saying.
And by the way, his first at bat at Yankee Stadium as a
Met. Isn't that the game we're going to? We're going with Mitch, right?
We got
to
figure out a way to
I
get
think
to
we're going there. I think
that
we're
is going to be some drama. All right,
let's
here we
play.
Go.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
College holds a mythic place in American culture, but there are stories you won't hear on the campus tours.
The higher-ups are concerned about one thing, and that is avoiding scandal.
I'm Margot Gray. On the new podcast, Campus Files, we cover everything from rigged admissions to the drama of Greek life and student protests. Listen to and follow Campus Files, an Odyssey original podcast, available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Let's get to this real
quick
here.
Yes, we got a couple of quick hitters for you.
Next winter.
Yes, we're ready for it. Maybe
no
in spring training we get down. Anyway.
You come in here whenever you want.
Aaron Glenn, first-time head coach, played for the team. You were the same thing, played for the Yankees, first-time manager. Any advice for Aaron Glenn?
I loved what I saw yesterday. I watched that. Loved what I saw watching him a lot this year with the Lions. Amazing presence. Seems to have really good coaching chops. Has a lot of experience, even though he hasn't been a head coach yet. I'm excited to see what he does. I think he should be great.
Oh yeah, that press conference was great. All right, a couple of the Yankee quick hitters here. Opening day is not tomorrow. If it was tomorrow, Jazz at second or Jazz at third? Right now, in your gut?
Right now at second, but
Natural position.
I mean, to some degree, but he hasn't been there in a couple years.
True.
And he was really good at third. I think people just look at him and think he looks like more of a second baseman. But the reality is he played the heck out of third.
I thought the metrics backed up the eye test. I agree. He's got a good arm.
Who's the other option? We're looking at DJ at third or who's at second?
Yeah, right now I would have Jazz at second and then Cabrera and DJ and even Peraza are all kind of vying in the mix for that third base.
Listen, Aaron, we all respect DJ LeMahieu. He's a terrific hitter. Then just get older, body. But like, how do you trust that he can even get through a season at this point?
Well, I mean, he's going to have that opportunity, and the reality is, DJ's been an amazing hitter, and
I know.
He's just been hurt.
Yep.
And so hopefully, with some health, some of that bat can return because he can still really defend, and even if it's on. Whether it's an everyday level or if it's against I do think there's a role for him. I think it's just going to be dependent on his health.
What are we looking at in the outfield here? Left field, center field, Bellinger going to be out there? Dominguez, what are we looking at with the Yankee outfield now?
Yeah, so we'll try and get Dominguez up to speed in left. Bellinger probably in center with Grisham in the mix there too. Because I feel like no matter – if Giancarlo has a day off or I want a DH Judge, I feel good about moving Bellinger wherever. I'd ideally not like to move Dominguez as much.
Yep.
So, like on a day where, let's just say G's out, Judge is going to DH, I can move Bellinger over and throw Grisham into center and keep Dominguez in left. But we'll see how it all shakes out. Everson Pereira, who I'm actually really excited about, is back this year. He had the Tommy John last year.
I saw that, yeah.
I think he can play into the mix for us. And there's always people that surprise you that you don't necessarily know about right now. And you never know what can happen from a move standpoint in these next few weeks.
So the two spot, obviously, a year ago was Soto. You and I and Sal were talking about during the commercial break about the leadoff spot, which obviously is very important for you guys. Bellinger makes sense in the two spot? Like right now, where you? I know it's early. There's a lot of things to obviously go through.
We're very left-handed. So it just depends who solves that leadoff spot. And is it one guy, or is it one guy versus a righty, one guy versus a lefty?
You probably don't prefer that. You want one guy, don't you? I mean, isn't that easier to manage that way? One guy batting leadoff?
I would, but not necessarily. I mean, if it's a, you know, if the leadoff hitter happens to be Jazz, you know, who I don't necessarily, you know, especially if we got a full group and guys that are really contributors, we'll see. I mean, yeah, I mean, a perfect world, you love rolling them out. But the biggest thing is trying to have a guy that is obviously getting on base at a high level in that number one spot. So it could be a number of guys. I think Dominguez's DNA is that, because he gets on a lot.
Mm-hmm.
He also has power and can really run too. So those are positive. But he has that DNA that gets on, whereas Bellinger and Jazz, you know, with their power and, you know, bat the ball, I feel like play well in the middle.
Can you put an end to this once and for all? Mm-hmm. Are you filling out the lineup, or is it a data applicator thing?
Joey.
Come on, Moody, give it to me. Here we are.
Boy. Yeah. You went for it. I was waiting for that. He said he was going to hit you with that. Save there.
I just wait for it to come down at 5:30 and say, okay, here we go.
Cashman give you what you got to do and call it a day.
Cashman this says what the he's data says he's today. All right.
You know, obviously, a lot of people have been, oh, you know, he's going to data applicate you. So it pissed me off last year when you said that, right? Which is just because it's nonsense. But at the same time, there's some truth. Like, the teams that aren't applying some data to what they're doing are behind and trying to catch up and are in a lot of ways screwed. There's always the balance, and that balance exists every single day. And it does with me. It does with us. But you'd be foolish to not look at a lot of the information that's available to you.
Aaron, you've been here for a while now. You're part of the fabric of the city. You've won a lot of games. And I think in large part, genuinely and generally, you're well-liked by Yankee fans, right? And, of course, you want to win the World Series. Do you feel that by at least getting to the World Series, it gives you a little more, not that you needed it, but maybe a little more cachet with some fans who weren't sure if it was maybe time for a change? You think about that stuff at all?
I honestly don't look at it that way. Like, you guys asked earlier, like, have you gotten over the world? Like, you never get over the end, and you're like, the obsession is like, you got to move past it, and like, now it's time to get ready for this season. But that's kind of where your focus is. It's not like, oh, I hope I'm getting enough approval here or not. Like, you know, while I have the privilege of being in this seat that I revere and I respect, like, I'm just trying to do the best that I can with our group to try and win a title. And that's kind of as far as I look at it. Mm-hmm. I'm sure there's a day when I'm done with this where I'll reflect a little bit more.
Yep.
But right now it's like, I'm really excited about our team. We talked about the pivot we made. I'm excited about who we brought in and what I think they can be, and some guys that are a little bit unknowns right now that we got to, you know, get something out of. We have a chance to go do something special. We got to go do it, and that's kind of where my mind is.
You going to the Super Bowl? Watch your Eagles?
No, I'll probably watch it from Tampa. I said, if somebody sends me a jet Sunday morning from Tampa and then flies me home after the game Sunday, then I'll go.
Well, how? I mean, House got one.
Or text your buddy Soto. Maybe he can set it up with $765
million.
Otherwise, I'll have some coaches and staff guys over in Tampa, and we'll watch it. That's how we did it a couple years ago.
Wow. Booney, thank you for your time. We appreciate it.
Yeah, good to see you.
It was awesome coming in. Good luck this season. We'll hopefully talk to you soon. Good luck in the Subway Series. Maybe you guys get one this year. Yeah, Booty, me and Manny. No, seriously, thank you for coming in. I had to get that in.
I
told him I hate the Dodgers now too, so I'm rooting for you guys. I hope you get there, and if the Mets aren't there, then I hope you beat the Dodgers. I'm really rooting for you. Seriously,
thanks, man. Glad to be with you guys.
All right, there you have it, Aaron Boone in with BT and Sal. We'll be back tomorrow, 10 a.m. Evan and Tiki, they're coming up next.
Hal Steinbrenner did an interview last night on the S Network, the Yankees Hot Stove Show.
Yes.
And Hal was asked a question about the Los Angeles Dodgers. Now, for those that have not been paying attention, the LA Dodgers, as Tiki said more than a year ago, is the new evil empire of Major League Baseball.
Mm-hmm.
We all know that. It has continued this offseason. They've signed Blake Snell.
Yep, have money, we'll spend it.
That's it. They signed Roky Sasaki.
They've signed Kirby Yates last night. They signed Tanner Scott. They have been unbelievable in improving their roster, and it's pissing a lot of fans off. Now, fans have every right to be jealous. I'm jealous, but I'm not pissed off. They're doing a great job. Good for them. They have money. They're spending it. A lot of owners in Major League Baseball have money. They just choose not to spend it. So Howe was asked a question about what the Dodgers are doing. We've included the question asked by Meredith Marakovich, and I want you to listen to his answer. Because there are many Yankee fans who are saying Hal Steinbrenner literally cried poverty on his network that he owns television show. Take a listen, and we will give fair analyzation of what Hal said.
You look at the Dodgers, they just continue to spend money. Their payroll almost approaching $400 million. What is going through your mind as you see them continuing to make these big signings?
Well, it's difficult for most of us owners to be able to do the kind of things that they're doing. Now, we'll see if it pays off. They still have to have a season, relatively injury-free, for it to work out for them. And it's a long season, as you know, and once you get to the postseason, anything could happen. We've seen that time and time again. So we'll see who's there at the end and if they're the ones.
Obviously, the last part of his statement is totally fine. We'll see what happens. It's the first part of his statement that sort of bothers me.
Why?
Because he's
right.
No, he's not.
It's absolutely he is.
That certain the owners Dodgers can't spend that way?
Well, individuals, just because we call them billionaires, mm-hmm. do not want to spend almost $1 billion.
Do not want to spend.
Do not want to.
They can't spend. Probably, they do not want to.
Probably economically, it's mm-hmm. not prudent okay. to spend that much money every single season. And the Dodgers can because the private equity firm association.
Okay.
The individual is different.
Okay.
And I think what he's talking about is the individual owner, not necessarily the multi-tiered private equity owner.
So I'm only
so
talking.
He's not crying poverty. He's just saying it just doesn't make sense to spend that much money every single year.
So I only have the information we are allowed to as a public. I understand the Yankees aren't releasing their finances. Mm-hmm. Baseball teams aren't releasing their finances.
Yes, they make a lot of money.
But there are reports that the Yankees' revenue brought in 2023 was $680 million. That is more than double the revenue that they brought in 2005.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So 20 years have gone by. They are bringing in almost triple, but clearly double. I also have read that based on their success last year, going to the World Series, even luxury ticket sales in the postseason, that they may have brought in an extra $80 million for their postseason run. So it's fair to say that their revenue they brought in last year was about $750 million.
Revenue.
Far greater than the revenue of 2004, 2005.
Not income. Revenue.
Their payroll doesn't match.
It doesn't have to.
It doesn't match.
Okay, but why do you break even? This is business 101.
No, I didn't say break even.
Breaking even is not running a successful
business. No, but I'm saying in 2004 and 2005, when their revenue was far less, their payroll was 205. It wasn't equal to percentage-wise to what they're spending now. And it doesn't mean they can't be successful. They have a very high payroll, and that's great, and that's fantastic. Mm-hmm. I will never call Hal Steinbrenner cheap. He is not cheap. That is not true.
No.
But what I'm saying is when he says
that was a $290 million payroll.
I got that, but he's saying teams can't spend that, and I have a big issue with those words. They choose not to spend that.
I think sometimes Hal, he says what he's thinking without thinking it through. And so what he should have said is most owners can't continuously spend like that year over year over year over year. The Dodgers can. And Guggenheim Park.
Can the Yankees?
They can.
Can the Yankees?
I don't know.
It's tough to know, but I know their revenue is almost triple as it was 20 years ago.
Until the Yankees start doing things like the Dodgers, that is deferring significant amounts of money on some of their contracts and obligating them. So this becomes a liability on their balance sheet. Like Shohei Ohtani, he's a liability on the Dodgers or Guggenheim's balance sheet until 2040. Think about that. You're going to throw liabilities that far out into your... And that's bad business. I mean, you can get away with it when it's a rounding error on your larger holdings balance sheet, but most owners can't and will not do that.
I'm only talking about the Yankees, though.
I know, but Shohei Ohtani, his tax number is $46 million. Right. He's making 70. You should be making 70 based on the contract, but so much of it is kicked out into the future. It's a liability that if they should ever have an economic downturn, crushes them. It bankrupts you. That's the stuff that kills you as a business when you don't plan properly ahead. The Dodgers are betting baseball's never going away, right? the popularity of the game is never going to wane. They're never going to have to worry about a television contract or making hundreds of millions of dollars from people who want to watch and consume their sport. But if they ever should, the Dodgers are screwed.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Most owners aren't going to put themselves out or stretch themselves out like that. That's what he's saying. The problem is he's not detailing what he's saying. Like, I get what he's talking about because the Guggenheim partners that own the Dodgers can do that. Most owners individually are not going to do that, including Steve Cohen.
I'm not talking about Steve Cohen.
But he's in the same boat.
No, but I'm talking about the Yankees. I'm talking about a franchise that's valued at over $7 billion.
What do you want them to do?
No. It's not about what I want them to do.
I think it's actually 10. But
it's even more. Right. It's not about what I want them to do, and I want to make this clear. You can win with a $200 million payroll. You can win with a $250 million payroll. It's not that you can't win if your payroll isn't as high as the L.A. Dodgers. I am not claiming that, nor am I claiming Hal Steinbrenner is cheap.
So
none of that.
What are you saying?
What I'm saying is when he says we can't, that's not true. It's you don't want to. Mm. They can spend more.
Well,
and if you want to argue they shouldn't because they wouldn't make as much money, okay. But they're making a ton of money. They can spend more. They are choosing not to.
I'm going to have to look up the corporate structure of the New York Yankees because if he answers to a board, he's saying he can't.
Because they're being told you can't have a payroll higher than whatever that number is?
If you answer to a board, then you can't.
Okay, I'm just answering to... Again, we don't have every piece of financial information, but the Yankees' revenue 20 years ago is not, I'm looking for the right word, you're usually very good with this, commensurate with the amount they're spending now. So, for example, in 2005, their revenue is at about $277 million. Their payroll was $205.
Yeah.
If they kept at that same percentage, their payroll this year would be $500 million. And I'm not saying it needs to be. What I'm saying is when you say we can't, that I don't think it's a we can, it's a we choose not to.
Right.
And again, Yankee fans, it's not that you have a cheap owner. It's not that they're the Wilpons. That's all BS. They spend a lot of money. No one's arguing that. It's the we can't argument that's kind of like, no, you choose not to. And there's a lot of owners who do that. Look, let me tell you something about Steve Cohen. You bring him up.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the difference between Steve Cohen. The Mets don't bring in that kind of money. When Steve Cohen spends a lot of money, he's spending his own money.
Of course.
And that's up to him how far he wants to go into the red or the blue or the green.
Well, that's because he has it.
I understand.
He has a net worth that's independent of his ownership of the Mets.
Right, but the business
of... is not.
I'm not talking about it. I'm talking about the business of the Yankees.
I know.
The Yankees bring in a hell of a lot more money than the Mets do.
But Hal,
that's a fact.
But Hal's net worth is the Yankees. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, and what's the net worth of the Yankees?
The business, the operation.
The Yankee business. That's what I'm talking about.
So if he mismanages the long-term financial health of the Yankees, he's mismanaging his own net worth.
But do you think it would be mismanaging to have a higher payroll, or it would just be we're spending more on players?
When I say higher payroll, the only way you're getting higher payroll, the only way you're doing what the Dodgers are doing is giving signing bonuses and deferring money.
Right.
That's the only way the Dodgers are doing it.
You could also have a higher payroll, too, and not defer as much.
Yeah, but do you...
Because you mentioned the risks of deferring.
Do you realize last year that the Mets, because the Mets are the ones that went really high last year, they spent... $500 million.
Mets spend a lot of money. I know that.
You can't do that every year. I mean, I know what you're talking
about. The Mets can't because they don't make nearly as much as the Yankees. Steve would just be losing money, which he has a right to do if he thinks it's a public trust, like he has said, and that's up to him. I'm talking about the Yankees. The Yankees are different than the Mets.
Hmm.
The Yankees make a lot more money. They just do.
Of course.
Their revenue is...
Because they're the Yankees.
Yes, and I'm not complaining about it. I'm just talking about it.
It doesn't mean that it's smart. See, what you're doing is you're spending... the unseen money that the Yankees are making.
That is correct.
That's what you're doing.
Yeah.
But I'm pretty sure that Hal has a board to answer to, and he has stakeholders to answer to. And as much as you may love the game, much as you love the sport, want to see success, it's the end of the day, it's about dollars and cents. That's why Jerry Jones owns the Cowboys. It's why Mark Davis owns the Raiders. It's why Steve Cohen owns the Mets. I know he's also a fan, but you don't get into the business of sports to lose money. It just doesn't make any sense.
The reason I've left the Mets out of this argument is because I think they're very different in that they don't make nearly as much money. And so
I don't think that's consequential. I don't think that matters.
Of course it... Why is it not?
Because
it don't bring in as much revenue.
But that's not what this is about.
Well, of course it is. If you make more money, you're able to spend more money. Isn't that like business 101?
Mm.
They bring in more money. The Yankees have a better TV deal. They own the freaking network. Right. They make tons off of that. They draw a hell of a lot better than the Mets. They bring in more money.
What you're saying, you're trying to spend Hal's money.
I'm trying to say that when he says, we can't, it's we won't. And I think there's a big difference.
Not really. I don't. I'm not going to agree with you. So it doesn't matter. We can fight about this all day, but I'm not going to agree with you.
Okay.
Because it's just bad business to spend that much money every single year.
You don't think they'd still be making a ton of money if they spent $50 million more on payroll?
Okay, but
they'd still be doing well, right?
All right. So, I mean, how can I explain this? I think of an easy
pretend
way.
Pretend you're talking to a 2-year-old because you are.
I'm just trying to think of an easy way to explain.
I like that. Thank you.
You don't get in the business to break even.
Right.
You don't get in the business to just have a steady growth of 4% every single year. Let's match inflation. So let's go over inflation. Let's say it's 7% every year. You don't get in business to do that. You get in business to make jumps of 20%, right? You want to find ways to become more efficient. You want to find ways to maximize the economies of scale of your business and grow exponentially. And so if you are the Dodgers, and you have tons of other assets on your balance sheet that is growing your business for you, can afford to take a 3 or 4% growth year over year on baseball. The Yankees can't do that. The Reds can't do that.
Well, the Yankees can do that. That's where we fundamentally. The Reds can. I agree with you. There are certain teams that can.
Okay, and then they have an accounting of their balance sheet. And it's like, okay, we grew over 2% last year.
You made less money than you did the year before, but you still made money
relative to the expansion of the economy. So we're growing, slower than the economy is growing. Is that good business? The answer is no. And so Hal Steinbrenner has to be cognizant of that, because he's not just answering for himself; he's answering for the stakeholders in the Yankees, and his net worth is tied to the state of the Yankees. Not like Steve Cohen, whose net worth is tied to the compounded interest on the billions of dollars that he
Cohen
has
is
tons of different other assets.
To me, Cohen and the Mets are very, very different. We'll get your calls. And Hal said some other interesting things, including that the Yankees are better without Juan Soto. I am so excited. I have a sports idea that is so twisted and so, for a better term, stupid, but yet so interesting. And I can't wait to tell Tiki Barber about it. But we'll do it a little bit later on in the 5 o'clock hour. I have test driven the idea.
That's a tease.
On Sean Morash. Sean knows about the wacky, crazy, really interesting, stupid sports idea. And without giving it away, as just a tease to the audience, how would you describe it in one word?
Unfortunately, more realistic than you'll think. That was like 7 words.
Yeah, that was too many words. That's okay. Fake Sean, how would you describe the idea? He actually doesn't know the idea.
I don't know the idea. Real Sean didn't tell me.
I'm sorry about that. We'll get to that a little bit later on, but Hal Steinbrenner did that interview on Yes Network, and I want to play you something, because I think this is a very interesting thing he said, and it's kind of an interesting sport, a little baseball debate. Hal Steinbrenner speaking on losing Juan Soto, but the pivot that they made and feeling like, hey, we have a better roster.
You know, some people may disagree with me, but some people will agree with me. I think we have a better team right now than we did a year ago today.
Interesting. Think we have a better team. Meredith circled back, asked again, like, really? You think this is a better team?
Do you feel like the roster is, in fact, better, that you were able to spread some of that money around on some different players, whether it be pitching or some help in the infield and outfield?
Yeah, I think our starting rotation's better. I think our defense is better. And I think, Bellinger and Goldschmidt, I think they're going to make up for, a good deal of Juan's offense, his bat.
So there's a couple of things here. The pitching is better. I think we could all agree on that.
Mm-hmm.
The defense is better. We could all agree on that. The last part I completely disagree on. I don't think Cody Bellinger and Paul Goldschmidt necessarily make up the offense for Juan Soto. But here's my follow-up to anybody who agrees with Hal, and I would follow this up with Hal. Because Hal also made clear they did everything they could to keep Juan Soto. And he really did.
Right. I mean, they did. They tried to spend as much money as the Mets did.
Absolutely. So no ill will, right? Uh-huh. They tried to keep him. Okay. If you tried to keep him and you offered $760 million, why'd you try to keep him if your backup plan makes you better? Answer that one. Floor is anyone's who wants to take that one. You want to try to take that?
It does it.
No, he's saying it makes him better. Why'd they try to sign Soto?
It makes you maybe more diverse. Doesn't make you better.
Okay. Well, you disagree with the premise, which is totally fine.
Right.
Sean, how would you kind of answer that follow-up I have, which is a fair follow-up?
The Yankees are more globally marketable with a tandem of Judge and Soto. So from a business perspective, he desperately wanted Soto back. Mm. Nor did he say that they would be done signing other people besides Soto. However, what has resulted since? Deeper pitching staff, a different kind of more eclectic lineup. You could argue they're a better pound-for-pound baseball team.
I like the way you tried to answer that.
So basically,
he's kind of right.
So basically, Soto being re-signed was more business and not baseball then?
Yeah, it's definitely baseball.
Yeah, I'm just trying to give you Hal's spin. I still think it was baseball. The Soto's great.
Are the Yankees better?
No.
Okay. So you disagree with the premise, which is fine.
Yeah. I don't think the drop-off is as drastic as we expected.
Well, they're different.
Soto.
I think they're different. It's impossible to compare year over year, especially when you upgraded your pitching staff and you lost Juan Soto. It's like, what are we talking about? Which one matters more to the success of the team? Now, you got to the World Series for the first time in a really long time with Juan Soto as one of the bats, but I don't think that you can definitively say we're better without Juan Soto.
Right. You're different.
You're different.
That's the key word. You're different. The starting pitching, if you weren't going to spend on Max Fried, but you decided, hey, we lost Juan Soto, we are. Mm. You improved your rotation in a way that you wouldn't have if you had kept Juan Soto. Defensively, yes, you're a better team.
Right.
Aaron Judge being in right field is better. Cody Bellinger being the center fielder is better. We'll see about Jason Dominguez in left field. Mm-hmm. Paul Goldschmidt is totally fine at first base. 100%. He's been a Gold Glove caliber first baseman.
As long as he hits and he's healthy, you're fine.
Now, there are major questions about that because he had a bad year last year.
100%, I agree.
So I don't think the offense is better, but I think the starting pitching is better. I think the bullpen is better, but I don't know how related that is. I think the Devin Williams trade probably happens either way, would be my assumption. It's just, if you think you're better, why'd you even try to re-sign Juan Soto? That's the thing that made me laugh. So I thought about it.
Yeah, but there's no way you couldn't say, thanks, Juan, for the season. Appreciate you coming.
Well, and you could have if you wanted to spread the money out, as Meredith put it.
Yeah, but
if you thought that they were better, then why'd you bring him back? So I thought about it. I have a good answer if I was Hal Steinbrenner. Like a real honest answer on this. So I think I could help him out.
Okay.
Tell me if you buy this. In the short term for this season, we have Cody Bellinger. We have Paul Goldschmidt. Mm-hmm. We have an in-his-prime Max Fried. We are better. Where you're not better is 3 years from now. Because 3 years from now, Juan Soto is still 29 years old and awesome and not on your team. And Max Fried is now 3 years older and probably not as good.
Yeah.
Cody Bellinger is not even on the roster.
Yeah, but
Paul Goldschmidt's in a retirement home.
It's impossible for him to say that. Right? It's impossible for him to concede in any way. I think that's an ego thing. Whether it's Hal Steinbrenner or any other owner or manager or player for that matter. Like to concede that you're inferior to anyone is just, it's defeatist. You're not going to do it.
Right.
And so he's trying to, save face is the wrong word, but he's trying to, keep his emotions at the right spot.
The reality is, I'll say this about the Yankees. I think they did everything they could to keep Juan Soto. We can get into the whole debate about luxury suites and all that crap.
It was inevitable.
I think their pivot was a very solid pivot. I still would have preferred to keep the all-world player, mainly because I got him for the next 15 years. So 6 years from now, when God knows who's on the Yankee roster, maybe it'll be better. Maybe you'll sign someone else that's awesome that you wouldn't have signed because of Soto. So I'm open-minded to know. We can't predict 6 years from now. But I think their pivot was really strong. They're missing one more piece. That's the way I view them. They're one more piece away. And what's kind of weird about that whole thing is...
What kind of piece?
It's another bat, and it's in the infield.
Yeah,
it's one more bat in the infield, so you're not relying on the corpse of DJ LeMahieu and Oswaldo Cabrera and Oswald Peraza. No offense to those guys, just I would want to add one more bat. But here's the beauty of it. This is what I'm going to make everybody feel better about. Because I can see the concern in your eyes, Sean. The Mets are in a league in which if they get off to a bad start, they don't add that big bat, they could fall out of it. They could miss the playoffs. I think the Yankees are good enough in the league that they're in that even though they are missing that bat, when we get to July 27th, they'll be right there.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that bat out there in late July is better than any bat they could add today.
Look, that might be true, and maybe the Cubs are a disaster, and they want to trade Kyle Tucker. Like, we go down the road. Any of those things could be true.
I hate playing that game. The Yankees just played this game 2 years ago in left field where they didn't address it. And then they thought, oh, you know, we'll hit some at the deadline. It never materialized. They were desperate and it fell flat on their face. And I think while the Yankees lost Juan Soto and they pivoted, and I am a Yankee fan, I'm happy. I think we're forgetting one thing. As much as we were frustrated by him, losing Gleyber Torres is pretty freaking important to this lineup, and that's the infield bat you're talking about. They didn't even entertain bringing him back. Mm. He ended up becoming a very important leadoff hitter for them and a big catalyst going to the World Series. They miss that bat drastically
right
now.
Yeah, but they miss a bat like that.
Right.
I don't think you could have convinced a Yankee fan that Gleyber Torres was your answer.
That's the problem, though, and I agree, but I think we need to not be shallow-minded. Gleyber Torres, despite that, was very important. And they, you're right. It's a bat like that. And there's no way. DJ LeMahieu is not that answer.
Well, that's what Evan's talking about. Like, that's what you need to replace.
Yeah, you're missing that. Absolutely. I just think that you're lucky. The Yankees are the best team in the American League. I'm just going to say that. Put it out there because I believe that. Mm. They may not be as good as they were last year. That's irrelevant. They're the best team in the American League. And if you disagree with me, okay, it was better.
Right.
I'll sit and wait. You think the Guardians are better? They got rid of Josh Naylor. You think the Mariners are better because they got a loaded staff? Great. Yeah, they're loaded staff.
To be fair, it could be Texas.
It could be Texas. How'd they do last year?
Okay, they won the World Series 2 years
ago. Okay, could be Texas. That's fine. Could be. I like the could be Texas. Is it Baltimore, whose owner's bitching and moaning that the sport needs a salary cap?
No, cheap corn dogs.
Is it Toronto?
Toronto? Nobody wants to play in Canada.
Is it Boston?
I mean, don't sleep on Boston.
Is it Kansas City? Bobby Witt Jr. revenge tour.
Hey.
All I know is, to me, the New York Yankees are the best team in the American League. And if they're not, they're the second best team in the American League. Cool. They're still a playoff team. Mm-hmm. So they are in a spot where even if they don't add that bat that you want and they need, they can still add that guy in July. But I want to give you a prediction. Can you save this? Because I'm going to nail this one.
Another thing I got to save?
Yeah, save this one. This is a good one. What's today's date? January 29th.
This month doesn't end also, by the way. Enough with January.
Just a reminder, there's always 31 days.
Quickly, and it just won't go away.
Oh, God.
You will add a bat before the start of the season. You're going to add that bat. He's a third baseman. I'm going to give you the name. I'm not saying you're going to like it. That's up to you guys to decide. But Yankee fans, Evan Roberts' brain is reporting that you guys will acquire Nolan Arenado before this season starts. Mm.
Oh, great.
Done. You good? Are we happy with that?
I mean,
no?
Nolan Arenado and Paul Goldschmidt.
Yeah, they're having a reunion.
So Josh Donaldson 1A and 1B? Is that what we're doing?
Wow. Okay, so you're not happy with that?
No. It just doesn't feel, I don't know.
Okay.
Springy.
To me, I feel like we already.
Springy.
Here's my point, Evan.
Yeah.
We already, to me, with Paul Goldschmidt, we already did this. We took the chance on the older guy for 1 year and did that. I don't want to do that at two spots in the
Okay. Event. I'm just letting you know. Write that one down. Save that audio so when it pops up on February 20th, you'll say, where did I hear that from? Oh, yeah, that's right. Evan Roberts' brain was reporting that on January 29th. You got that?
January 29th, Evan Roberts' brain.
I'm using my noodle here. There's a standoff in negotiations. The Cardinals don't want to pay him.
Right.
The Yankees are like, we don't want to pay him. They'll meet somewhere in the middle on a contract where the Cardinals pay off him a lot of it. And the Yankees are like, cool, it doesn't even cost us that much. Let's bring him in to play third base.
I think
Bregman?
What about Bregman?
Think he's an option?
No.
Why not?
Because I don't think the Yankees are spending like that.
Mm.
I mean, if
maybe
if you,
this was a smokescreen by Hal.
Really? That'd be some smokescreen.
Be a great swerve.
Be a tremendous move. I think Bregman's a hell of a player. I think he'd be great for this team. They go get Alex Bregman. God bless him. Mm. I don't think it's going to happen.
I think
you're probably right, but
I think they're going to platoon LeMahieu. I think they're going to play a lot of Oswaldo Cabrera, and I think we're going to revisit a name that we talked about last year at the deadline. I think in July the Yankees will trade for Ryan McMahon.
All right, there you go. Long-term prediction by Sean Morash.
My brain is reporting that.
That's your brain reporting? That's a new one, right?
Yes.
When you want to make a prediction?
My brain.
My brain is reporting. Blah, 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 blah,
His
blah.
His belly is reporting that.
Kick it!
Two back on the fan. It's Batesy and Sal minus Sal. Little boys get us going here. Final hour of the show. Ah, I love this song. All right, so you heard Bogus there. Almost 50 degrees in Central Park. Boy, it's almost baseball season. I know it seems a little further away than it really is, but I mean, it's basically February. And as Aaron Boone told us yesterday, he's heading out of Tampa on February 6th. And then I think 6 or 7 days after that, the Yankees, obviously pitchers and catchers start. And, of course, from the Mets' perspective as well. And I just think it's going to be a wild baseball season. I really do. Like, the back backdrop of Soto is, oh God, like we haven't really focused too much on that because we've dealt primarily with him leaving the Yankees. And now the reality is, okay, we know he's a Met, and now he got to deliver. And I think almost all of us believe that he will. But, you know, without Judge behind you, will you deliver quite the way you did a year ago? My money would say no, though I think he'll certainly be really good. I think there'd be a little drop in performance, probably more like he was before he got to the Yankees. And, you know, it's just, it's a lot of fun storylines here. You know, Mendy in year two. You know, obviously, the more big years like Aaron Judge puts up, if he stays healthy, the more MVPs he starts to accrue. His place in the game just continues to elevate. Can't wait to watch Luis Gil deal as a little bit of a more refined pitcher. You know, Volpe and Austin Wells and Vientos and Beatty and Mauricio, some of these young players, including, of course, maybe the biggest name, Alvarez, as well, for the Mets. He's got to bounce back, have a big season. How about Jason Dominguez? Now, we'll get to the outfield stuff in a minute. I wonder where he's going to hit. And quite frankly, I wonder who the heck is going to get the table and get the party going for the Yankees in the leadoff spot. And we asked Aaron Boone that yesterday here on the show. He was in studio with us for a whole hour. BT and Sal, phenomenal. Boone, he was great. Go find it. Free Odyssey app. It was awesome. And here's what he said about the Yankees leadoff spot.
Could be a number of guys. I think Dominguez's DNA is that because he gets on a lot. He also has power and can really run too. So those are positive. But he has that DNA that gets on, whereas Bellinger and Jazz, you know, with their power and bat the ball, I feel like play well in the middle.
Okay. Now, when the way he was first described, Dominguez, like I never once looked at you, even when he first popped up in Houston a couple of years ago and hit his first home run, I'm like, I don't envision Jason Dominguez ever hitting first. But doesn't mean that he can't. I think when it's all said and done, I think he's probably more two, or if he's really, really the real deal, three, four, five, somewhere in there. That's interesting. Yeah, I think I'm also smart enough to know, like many of you, you know, like when you talk about, I don't know, a positional battle in camp with, say, running backs. Well, we have three running backs. Well, who's going to start? Well, we'll figure it out. We got three. Well, all right, you got two, three, you got two. That means you probably don't even really have one in certain instances. Or, yeah, we got two closers. All right, that means you're screwed because you got two guys who are okay and nobody who's amazing. So, listen, sometimes those things work themselves out favorably. Sometimes it's a big issue. I'll tell you one thing about Jason Dominguez that I think has been lost in translation this offseason. If you think of, and really at the end of last year, not getting off the bench in the playoffs, although I think it was valuable being there and watching his teammates be involved in high-leverage games, I think it's going to benefit certainly Volpe and Wells and the Mets young guys as well tremendously. I mean, geez, if you can deal with that stuff in October, you think it's going to be that hard for Alvarez to go into a three-game series down against the Marlins in May? You know, or Volpe to have a big weekend against the Tigers in July out in Comerica. Probably a little different, you know. But Dominguez, it's almost like we forgot the tantalizing skill set. And it's gone from, this guy seems like he might be the next Mickey Mantle, which was always ridiculous, to this dude can't catch a pop-up. That's what you hear about Dominguez now. Not that he can run, not that he's got you know, really light tower power, not that he's got an above average arm, not that he's an above average, although I do think it's a little over. I don't think he's an amazing center fielder, and I don't think he ever will be amazing if he ever goes there. Although Boone told us yesterday he's going to play left field to start, Bellinger in center. I think he can handle center. I think he'd be better than Judge. I don't think he's a star. He's not Beltran out there or Andrew Jones. He's not one of those guys. Devon White, Gary Pettis, no, not Griffey, not Willie Mays, but he's functional in center field if he's got to play there. But I think so many of you are just kind of brushing, well, Dominguez, yeah, we'll see what he does. Start him in left, and if he doesn't work out, he's in the minors. Hey, I think Jason Dominguez is going to have a monster season. I really do. This notion that Jason Dominguez is broken because he misplayed two pop, now they were gross. And the optics, I get it, were a bit alarming. But this thought that he cannot even remotely learn how to play left field and he's going to embarrass himself and be on skates every night and therefore that's going to carry him into the box is ridiculous. So let me give you two versions of the Yankees very quick. We'll get back to these calls, all right? 888-808-1019, BT and Sal on the fan. Sal is out. Think he's got the anesthesia yet or the local? Think he's localized yet? And we'll find out. The Yankees with the Dominguez we think we might get, and then a disappointing Dominguez. All right? So the first is the good Dominguez. Now, you've got an all-timer in Judge. You've got Grisham from day one, who, by the way, stole 40 bases and had 20-plus bombs, and very probably, as Boone also told us, will start the season at his natural position of second base. So, Judge all-timer, Grisham stud. First base, massive upgrade. Massive. I mean, Rizzo lost it fast. I think Austin Wells is eventually going to be an all-star as a catcher. Not saying he's Thurman. Not saying he's Jorge. He's going to hit 20-something home runs, and he's going to be a good enough defender. Eventually, he'll make an all-star game or two. I love the guy. I'm higher on him than I am Volpe. And I like Volpe, but I'm a little worried about Volpe. All right, let's say Volpe ticks up a little bit. I'm not going to go nuts with that. We know about the staff, lights out. Devin Williams, lights out, blah, blah, blah. Luke Weaver, close, setup man, lights out. Bellinger. Let's just say Bellinger has a good year, not even a great year. Let's say 270, 15 to 18 steals, 30 home runs, very good center field, fast on the bases. And now, again, this is under the premise of a good Dominguez. I mean, just think about that. Think about that. Now, even with a bad Dominguez or an overmatched Dominguez who's got to go back to AAA, up and down on the Express, whatever, maybe he doesn't have a year like Vientos, which I don't think he's going to do that, no matter what. But even if he's just, say if he's 280 with some home runs and some steals, which I think you're going to get, maybe 280 is a bit high, 270s, whatever. That changes the entire profile of the Yankees. Because everything that we worried about and ultimately came to fruition with the Yankees a year ago, don't catch the ball well enough. They addressed it at first. They addressed it at center. Right field's better with Judge. Wells more experienced. Volpe's a vacuum over at short. You know, Jazz will be better than Gleyber. And if, again, under the premise of even though Verdugo was a very good defensive outfielder, if you know, he's just good or average in left field, Yankees deficiencies have pretty much all been wiped away. Now, that doesn't mean they're better than the Dodgers. They're not. No matter what, they can get Bregman tonight. And on paper, nobody's saying they're better than the Dodgers. They're not. No way. Doesn't mean you can't beat them. Doesn't mean you can't mess around and beat them. You know? I'm looking forward to watching the Yankees play. Big time. 888-808-1019. Let me get Pat in Connecticut on the fan. BT and Sal. What's happening, Patty?
Hey, FDT, just wanted to say good luck to Sal today, too.
Yes.
Happy for taking my call there.
Yes, I hope by the way, Pat, I hope I said this to start the show. I hope the eyesight, truthfully, is restored for him and his family and his day-to-day existence. Of course, make it easier on my partner, and I mean that from the bottom of my heart. I also hope his eyes are better so that he can just see how different Soto looks without Mr. Number 99 yeah. behind him. But that's for a different day to discuss.
Yes, indeed. You know, I'm in really like this whole Yankee lineup as a whole. Maybe more rallies with doubles and singles instead of just waiting on the home run, leading to a little bit more exciting baseball. That way, you know, I mean, I miss Soto. I had him on my fantasy team. I traded him already because I wasn't going to root for a Met all year long. So I'm over it. Got my opening day tickets yesterday on the pre-on sale. So we're ready. I think we're going to have a great season.
Yeah, listen, I mean, great is a championship. Thanks for the call there, Pat. I try not to misuse or overuse the word great. Like, last year to me was a really good season. Wasn't great. Great culminates with a championship, with a parade, okay? But, you know, going in, you know, I even think they can absorb a few injuries. They've got great, their pitching staff is tremendous. It's tremendous. And they're going to hit some home runs, but they're not overly reliant on it. They're going to create and manufacture some runs. Yeah, I like the way the Yankees are set up. Again, of course, we're going to miss Soto. He's an old-timer, but I think their pivot, I know that that's overused and corny, but their pivot's been strong.
Started off with a little baseball this morning as BT and Sal did have Aaron Boone in studio for an hour yesterday, and it was a midday show sweep of the manager in terms of their 80s baseball card competition, but it was a good battle nonetheless. Enjoyed listening to some of that. That aside, Boone still, of course, dealing with the aftermath of the Yankees losing the World Series to the Dodgers. Said not something you ever get over as a competitor. Making matters worse, you, of course, had a bunch of guys from the Dodgers, some nameless, some not, talking trash and ripping the Yanks after the fact, and the guys asked him about that.
Didn't like it. They won, you know, so they had that right. So, you know, a couple of people, like, saying some things. It's like, see what you did this year? Like, it wasn't the Freddie Freemans and Shohei's and Mookie's popping off. It was some others.
Joe Kelly, of course, comes to mind.
That's exactly who he was talking about.
Yeah, I would say so. As far as what the Dodgers have done in this offseason and all of their signings and additions, Boone not going so far as to say the business of baseball is broken. However,
a team like this that we're all going, wow, they signed another. Whoa, they got and they've gone to a place payroll wise that it's like, you know, hard to wrap your brain around. And I worry a little bit about that from a collective bargaining agreement the next time.
In terms of a potential work stoppage, which obviously is not something anyone wants from a fan standpoint.
Yeah, the amazing thing is that the Yankees are worrying about what other people are spending.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's actually kind of funny.
I mean, they're clearly third on that list right now in baseball.
And they're going to, did they ask him about sweeping right through the American League because nobody's even close to them?
I am still working through the back half hour of that, right. So they may have. But not in the part that I heard. They talked Dodgers. They talked Soto. They talked about him dealing with players behind the scenes because obviously front-facing, it's a lot of coddling and whatnot.
I thought they did a great job with him. I listened to it. I enjoyed it. I love the baseball card pack thing. Yeah. There was only one thing that annoyed me, though, is when they referenced what they were talking about in the break, and it was like the lineup. We were just talking about this in the break and who was leading off and playing left field. I'm like, in the break, you talk about stuff that you can't talk about on the air. You don't talk about the questions you're talking about on the air. You find other stuff. Talk about whatever the hell else to establish that relationship. Don't waste your time in a break talking about who's playing left field.
Maybe that annoyed me. Maybe there were things spoken about during the break that they just didn't reference on the air.
We were just talking at a break. Who's playing? Yeah. Who's leading off? I'm like, what?
You're not supposed to be talking in the break. You're supposed to be talking on the air.
Well, you know, BT's, he wants to get into stuff and break it down and, make sure they're on top of it. So, and as you know, guys, because we don't play the cuts often from Boone on this show, because there's a lot of kind of hemming and hawing, and it takes them a while. And there was some of that yesterday, so they probably wanted to maybe prepare him a little bit for where they were going so that he could get his thoughts collected.
They did a great job with it. I was laughing. I thought it was informative. They got good answers out of him.
Yeah.
That's just my own behind the curtains thing.
Fair enough.
I got someone in there like that, we do it all the time. You talk like guys. You don't talk about the lineup. Like, what's going on in your life? What are you doing here? You going here? You going there? You going to the Super Bowl? I saw you at the Eagles game. Something else. Maybe they did. Maybe they did. He was in there for an hour. So.
I think there was a little, and they referenced some of it, about the behind-the-scenes stuff with Soto and the Boone-Carlos Mendoza relationship and what that's been like. And
that was funny.
The aftermath of Soto.
That was funny. So he told a story, Boone, at the writer's dinner. So they're sitting next to each other, Boone and Mendoza. And they hadn't talked about Soto yet together at all. So he's sitting there and they're going through the program. And then if you flipped over the program, it was all like this Juan Soto Mets stuff. And Mendoza just slid it over to Aaron Boone. I thought that was very funny.
Very subtle, yes. We referenced the Dodgers there, or Boone did, in that last cut we played. And there they were again yesterday. And so the Kirby Yates thing had been out there, but I guess finalized yesterday, the agreement. So
that's same with Sasaki, and there was something else, too.
Yeah, but Yates, it's a year, $13 million, so here's another addition to their bullpen. This guy was one of the best on the back end last year as far as statistics go. Meantime, Hal Steinbrenner, in a one-on-one with Meredith Marakovitz on the YES Network, addressing the Dodgers, their spending, in this new way of doing business.
It's difficult for most of us owners to be able to do the kind of things that they're doing. Now, we'll see if it pays off. They still have to have a season relatively injury-free for it to work out for them, and it's a long season, as you know, and once you get to the postseason, anything could happen. We've seen that time and time again, so we'll see who's there at the end and if they're the ones.
I'm just thinking about the Pirates ownership, the Tampa Bay Rays ownership, the Miami Marlins ownership, the Minnesota Twins ownership, the Reds ownership, the Cleveland ownership, when they hear Steinbrenner say that.
Sticking up for the little man.
Oh, my God.
A lot of us owners can't do those type of things.
Yeah. He ropes himself right in there with those guys.
Yeah, but I
now.
Think that consortium that owns the Dodgers is worth like $330 billion.
Yeah, they just gave $100 million to wildfire relief.
Yeah.
And Frank the Tank had a funny tweet. He goes, yeah, it's all, you'll see it in 2033.
Deferred payments.
Deferred payments.
Yeah. As for the Yankees, they do still have some holes that haven't been addressed, specifically in the infield and atop the batting order, especially with the departure of one Juan Soto to the Mets. So here was Boone on the infield outlook with spring training about a month away now.
Right now, I would have Jazz at second, and then Cabrera and DJ and even Peraza are all kind of vying in the mix for that third base.
And he did talk up, hey, DJ can get healthy, you know, and you knew that was coming.
Yeah,
you knew
course,
that was
yes.
coming.
And they're hoping.
Yeah. So Cody Bellinger is likely going to play center field, and Jason Dominguez going to get a shot at left with Aaron Judge kicking back over to right field.